This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen, and Noel Lim. In about half an hour, we're having the breakfast grill where I'll be speaking with Tarang Gupta, Managing Director of Dutch Lady Milk Industries Berhad. Now, Dutch Lady's been a household name for decades when it comes to all things milk, but in a world that is rapidly shifting from dairy to plant-based alternatives, how do they stack up against their competitors? Now, Tarang Gupta is going to join us to talk about the company's growth strategies on the back of a global pandemic. That's happening after the 8 o'clock news. Stay tuned. But in the meantime, we're following up on a story that we covered yesterday about the worrying increase of COVID-19 cases worldwide.
Yeah, positive cases have now crossed the 40 million mark this week, according to a Johns Hopkins University tally. And what's worrying is that experts believe that the real number of cases and deaths are probably much higher, given the lack of testing and potential underreporting in some countries. In separate Reuters data, the numbers are staggering. Data shows that record one-day increases in new infections at the end of last week, and an average of around 347,000 cases each day over the past week, compared with 292,000 in the first week of October. And the worst hit countries include the US, India, and Brazil, where positive cases in North Central and South America represent over 40% of the new cases.
So why the sudden surge in COVID-19 cases worldwide? Well, that's what we're asking our guest this morning, Benjamin Cowling, Professor of Infectious Disease Epidemiology at the University of Hong Kong, joins us on the line now. Ben, thank you so much for joining us. Now, besides a change in season, what are the reasons behind the jump in COVID-19 cases that we're currently seeing?
If we go back about 6 months, there were surges in many different parts of the world, in Europe, in the US, in the Southern Hemisphere as well. And a lot of measures were put in place to control those surges. And the numbers came back down again through the Northern Hemisphere summer. But now, as the measures have been relaxed, we do see case numbers resurging. And because there's a lot more testing capacity now than there was 6 months ago, that means the numbers of cases every day now seem higher. I don't know if they're really higher than they were 6 months ago, but they seem higher because we're doing such a lot more testing now than we were 6 months ago in that first wave.
In efforts to contain a second wave of infections, parts of the UK were put into lockdown. Now, their scientific advisor to the government said that Britain needs to take a more stricter national lockdown. But are lockdowns the answer to curbing the spread of this coronavirus?
I think they're not a sustainable answer. So in the UK, in some parts, maybe like in Manchester, there really is a big problem in hospitals where there are too many patients in hospital. The intensive care units are full and they have to do something like an emergency measure. And I think a lockdown is an emergency measure, maybe just put in place for a short amount of time to get over a hump, to bring numbers back down again quickly, and then go back to some more sustainable longer term measures, maybe some moderate social distancing, but not a complete lockdown, not a stay at home order.
Do you think governments lifted their feet off the pedal too quickly once they managed to contain the virus at the initial, once the numbers started looking good? Do you think they took their foot off the pedal too quickly?
I don't think so. In hindsight, it's always easier to say what should or shouldn't have been done. When case numbers come down to a low level, it's really a good time to relax a bit, to let people get out and about, to relax the social distancing measures that have been in place. At the same time, if we can keep a little bit of those measures in place, maybe we can hold off a resurgence for longer. And so that's the fine balance that health authorities have to decide on. You know, what do you keep in place after you relax a lockdown? Because the more you keep in place, the more you can delay a resurgence. But all of these social distancing measures have damaging effects on the economy, of course.
So Ben, with that in mind, should we expect this to be the new normal then, that there will be a spike in cases every few months or so once people start getting a bit more lax with the measures?
Yeah, I think so. And maybe that's something that governments can really plan for now, knowing what might be going to happen in the next 6 months or even the next 12 months, and have a more kind of clear objective and a clear plan to say, you know, when case numbers go up to a certain level, we're going to tighten measures, maybe do a short lockdown, like a circuit breaker, like they did in Singapore. Mm. When numbers of cases are lower, we are going to relax, but we need to be ready to bring measures back if or when they're necessary, if there's a resurgence. I think a lot of people haven't realized that we are going to have these resurgences at regular intervals. It's not a surprise.
Now, Ben, there's also always this question of mass testing and whether countries are doing enough of it. I mean, why is it that it doesn't seem like having a robust system for testing, tracing, isolating, it doesn't seem like this is given a priority when governments roll out their COVID-19 strategy plans, despite the surety that it would give in helping contain the spread of the disease? Why is this the case?
I think some places are doing better than others. And the key thing to remember about test and trace is the trace that's really important in terms of controlling transmission. So we can do a lot of testing, we can find a lot of cases, but oftentimes the people that we pick up as cases have already been ill for a while, they've already passed on infection. We need to go that extra step, do the contact tracing and the quarantine. In Singapore, they're really, really good at it, and they can rely, it seems, on testing and tracing, and they don't need much social distancing. Other parts of the world not doing maybe as well as Singapore and will still need some social distancing. And of course, it depends on the capacity for doing a lot of testing and the capacity for doing the contact tracing, quarantining the people. Not everywhere in the world can do that. So it really does depend on the local circumstances.
The US FDA is expected to meet on Thursday to discuss vaccine candidates. Could they reach a decision on a candidate or candidates?
Let's see. I don't know what information they've got available. We know there's a lot of vaccines in the pipeline. Hopefully some of them are coming close to reporting their big trial results, whether or not they're effective. And we really hope they are. Everyone's got their fingers crossed, because the sooner we can get a vaccine, the sooner everyone can get back to normal.
But on that note, Ben, even if we do get a vaccine, this isn't an immediate fix, right? It's going to take some time for it to be deployed and for it to really get distributed across the board.
Yeah, so for somewhere like Malaysia, I would imagine the first dose of vaccine hopefully could come maybe the second quarter of next year, maybe towards the middle of next year. Maybe they'd be prioritized for healthcare workers, maybe they'd be prioritized for the elderly. And then there'll be more doses coming every month, maybe millions of doses per month coming online, ready to be distributed and used. And then aiming to get lots and lots of people, majority of the population, vaccinated by the end of next year, early 2022. But there's a question, at what point do you think you've vaccinated enough people to go back to normal? Is it when you vaccinated the elderly and then the threat has passed of a lot of deaths? Or do you wait until you've vaccinated more than half the population, because then you don't really have a risk of an epidemic anymore? So we'll have to see what governments decide to do. But my guess is there'll be a big push to try and get back to normal just after at least elderly and older adults and vulnerable people have been vaccinated, because that's really the major concern for COVID. If young people get COVID, it is not such a big deal. But if older people get it, then it can be really nasty.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Ben. That was Benjamin Cowling, Professor of Infectious Disease Epidemiology at the University of Hong Kong. And he's given us quite a lot of information, I think. There's quite a lot to unpack. And one of which is that he raised the question of at what point, during the vaccination process, will people and governments be comfortable returning to normal? Is it when you've got the whole population vaccinated, just the elderly, maybe half the population? What's the comfortable level?
Yeah, I think everyone is very hopeful about the vaccine, and yes, rightly so. But we have to remember, it's not going to be a magic bullet, right? There are going to be distribution issues. It's going to take time for us to get it, and on top of that, how the application of it is going to take some time. It's not going to be an immediate fix. Second quarter 2021 is the hopeful earliest time that Malaysia may get it. Who knows when we'll actually get it, and then how that plays out is going to be, it's going to take some time.
Yeah, so even the vaccine comes into place, there are sustainable measures that we also need to activate. For example, we may still have to have some form of healthy physical distancing so that it doesn't hurt the economy too much. And at the same time, we, keep the healthcare system intact.
Absolutely. And of course, at this point in time, it's very important to nevertheless maintain all the SOPs that you possibly can. Distance, practice good hand hygiene. And if you're interested in more news about the COVID vaccine and whether or not Malaysia, what's Malaysia's priority when it comes to that, you can tune in. You can have a look for the conversation that Wang Xiaoning recently had with Kari Jamaluddin, the Minister of Science, Technology and Innovation. That was held last week. So that was on The Breakfast Grill. You can find it on the BFM app as well as on Spotify. But we're heading into some messages now. And then up next, the water woes in Selangor with S. Piarapakaran, President of the Association of Water and Energy Research. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.